We know street takeovers continue to be a real problem in Connecticut, but let's do a deeper dive into some of the vehicles that are used, not just in street takeovers, but in, I'm going to call it, unruly behavior that you'll sometimes see in your neighborhoods or on the streets around your towns and cities, like gas and electric scooters, motorbikes, dirt bikes. We've had a lot of questions from listeners regarding some of the legalities around this. And so we thought it'd be a great time to have the Connecticut State Police come back on the show, talk about street takeovers, talk about these types of vehicles, and really help us to understand what is allowed and what isn't. So Sergeant Luke Davis joins us back with the Connecticut State Police. We always appreciate having Sergeant Davis with us. Welcome back. Let's start with, first of all, we had our latest street takeover just last week in Ansonia. Lovely. I'm being sarcastic. And I'm wondering, how often do we see, Sergeant Davis, these types of vehicles I just listed before involved in street takeovers?
Well, hey, good morning, Melissa. First and foremost, thanks for having me yet again. So we have been seeing a lot of instances involving off-road vehicles, dirt bikes, ATVs, stuff of that nature. And it's becoming more prevalent because those vehicles are smaller, easier to maneuver, and a lot of times easier to get away in a pinch when something goes south and police end up showing up, or worst case scenario, when somebody in one of those street takeovers actually ends up getting hurt.
Mm. So I think the reason a lot of people have questions about them is, like I said, you certainly see them in street takeovers. That Ansonia takeover, we have some of the dash cam video that came from the police, and you could see some of those vehicles in them. And you see a lot of young people, certainly. And so I think that's where a lot of these questions about the legality surrounding them come from. First of all, are we still under the impression, Sergeant Davis, that a lot of these people, a lot of these vehicles are not registered with the state of Connecticut?
Correct. So a lot of these instances where we're seeing these actions, like particularly in street takeovers or even just reckless behavior driving through city streets, for example, these vehicles are not registered. So by Connecticut state law, any vehicle that has an engine size greater than 49 cc's, and that's pretty small, is required to be registered with the state. So when you're talking an engine that small, you're talking like a moped or a scooter that's maybe capable of 30, 40 miles an hour tops.
Wow. Okay. So they all should be registered, essentially. We're not talking about a Razor scooter here. We're talking about any of those vehicles you're basically seeing. They should be registered.
In theory, yes. However, there are not provisions for registering every single one of those vehicles you may see. So we do not have currently any provisions for registering like an all-terrain vehicle. So the one exception to that, let me back that up. There's actually a couple. So dirt bikes can, in fact, be registered as motorcycles, and they can be driven on public roadways. And the reason behind that, more or less, is for transit from one trail point to another that may actually result in that vehicle having to cross a public roadway. The other would be slow speed vehicles, which is still kind of a relatively new thing. So you're talking like golf carts, more or less, like vehicles that are going to be operating at slow speeds, kind of similar to those scooters where they're not really going over 40 miles an hour, and mm-hmm. they are going to be restricted to staying to secondary or tertiary roadways with a speed limit that reflects what the vehicle can travel at.
Okay. Do you have to have a license to operate any of these?
Yes, you do. So any vehicle that requires a registration in the state of Connecticut does require that you have an operator's license to drive it.
Okay. See, and I mean, that kind of answers the question. You got to be 16 or older, I would imagine, to be able to operate them.
Correct.
Okay. I was going to take a picture yesterday. We have Sergeant Davis here, who's with the Connecticut State Police. I was going to take a picture for you, Sergeant Davis, but I don't text and drive, so I didn't do it. But there was somebody in Milford who was driving around. I don't know if it would be an ATV. My husband and I were trying to figure out what this would be. It looked like a very, I guess it could be an ATV, but it almost looked like a race car, but it was open. And it would speed up, obviously, but I don't know what it was. I'm going to see if I can find a picture and send it to you. But I'm wondering if that's an ATV, because when I think ATV, I'm always thinking of like the off-roading, if you're like going, I don't know, on like sand dunes and stuff. I don't know. Maybe I'm archaic. But this thing looked like almost like an open race car looking thing, but smaller. I'm not describing it very well. I apologize. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I actually think I know exactly what you're talking
about. I knew you would share a brain with me. Okay, so you know what I'm talking about. I've never seen this before.
I do, yeah. And actually, those are technically classified as motorcycles.
Are they really?
Yes. So they're kind of unique. I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head. I think it may be called a Raptor. But it's essentially a three-wheeled vehicle that is a two-seater, and they are registered as motorcycles in the state of Connecticut.
Huh. Fascinating. Yeah, this one was called a slingshot, or at least that's what it said on the side of it.
That's it, yes. Slingshot.
Okay. A slingshot. Okay, well, there you go. So that, too, would be one that needs to be registered. So it's technically a motorcycle. Interesting. Okay. That's interesting.
Yep, I actually saw one on 91 in Hartford yesterday.
Oh, that was going to be my next question because my husband and I were debating that. So they can go on the highway.
They can, yes. So those vehicles are capable of traveling at highway speed. So as registered as a motorcycle, they do have access to go onto a limited access highway.
I was wondering because, I mean, this guy would speed up, slow down, whatever. But it was sort of more show-offy, if I will, you know, not to make this guy feel bad. But, it'd speed up and then it'd be like the light was there. So I thought, man, I don't know how much, like, why would you want to invest in a vehicle like this? I feel like you're only going on town roads. You really can't go that fast. But then my husband said he probably could go on the highway. I thought, I don't know if he can. But he can. Okay, so it's a motorcycle, technically. Yes. Interesting.
Yes.
See? See, we're all learning together. We have Sergeant Luke Davis here with the Connecticut State Police, and we're talking about these either gas and electric scooters, motorbikes, dirt bikes, ATVs, apparently motorcycles that now became slingshots, who knew, and just kind of understanding the legality around them. So what happens if they're not registered, they're not insured, maybe the driver's not licensed, they're underage, but they get into an accident? I mean, let's take out the, even just the street takeover, because we understand what's happening at that level. What if you get hurt or you cause an accident?
There's a lot of different components that come into play here. So, I mean, you have multiple violations of state law. So you're operating an unregistered motor vehicle. You're operating an uninsured motor vehicle. And those are all ramifications that can come back in the legal system on somebody who may cause injury to another person.
Wow. I have to ask this, Sergeant Davis, because I feel like more and more we're seeing these, these different vehicles being used. Has this made the job of a police officer, Connecticut State Police, a trooper, has this made it exponentially more difficult, more challenging?
Well, there's always challenges that are associated when we see new trends pop up in the world, particularly those that are of the nature that we deal with in our business, which would be illegal behavior. So, yeah, I mean, it goes without saying, I think, that when we're dealing with these situations, and particularly for people who choose to not stop for the police, that it becomes more of a challenge in terms of being able to enforce the law and to educate the public at the same time and let people know, like, actions have consequences. These sorts of things are not okay, and they're not okay for a reason.
So I know that there's an effort to try and obviously combat this issue a lot more. The street takeover, certainly. But do you feel like we need to do more? I mean, I guess it comes down to the municipalities, not so much the state. But especially now that I can find out that some of these things can go on the highway, do you feel like we need to do more to, either, I don't want to say crack down on the usage, because there are probably people who are doing it legally and are not disturbing others. So I hate to put everybody into one category. But do we need more provisions? As you mentioned, we're seeing them pop up more and more. It feels like it's become more trendy, I'm going to say, in the last 5 years. I don't know if I'm correct in saying that. But do you feel like we need more protections in place, provisions in place, things like that?
I think there's always room for improvement when it comes to situations that we deal with and dealing with these dangerous, reckless trends. So when we come into these circumstances, for example, as I was saying, with vehicles being unregistered, uninsured, if we have an instance of people who do stop and we have them detained during the course of an investigation, those vehicles are going to end up getting towed. And they're all going to get cited one way or another, whether they're a juvenile and they end up getting a summons to a juvenile court through their parent, or they're getting a very big hefty fine as an adult or a licensed juvenile operator.
And like a motorcycle or a car or truck, what have you, do these scooters, ATVs, do all of these vehicles have to have license plates on them? Not to make your job harder or not to make police jobs harder, but if people spot, you know, these vehicles that are not registered or not, you know, not a licensed rider or something like that, I mean, is there a way that they could, you know, alert the police? Because especially since you're saying a lot of them are coming from out of town, is there a way that you could even spot that something is not licensed or registered or, you know, I don't know if that's possible.
No, that's actually very, very sensible, and it's a good question, because any vehicle that is required to be registered in the state of Connecticut is also required to display the license plate or plates that are furnished by the Connecticut DMV. So we all know what a Connecticut license plate looks like. The motorcycle plates, for example, or smaller vehicle plates are a lot smaller than what you would see on a passenger vehicle, but they are required to be visibly displayed on that vehicle while it is in operation on a public roadway. So for anybody to see a vehicle that does not have a plate clearly displayed is certainly warranting a call to either their state or local police.
Yeah. Like I say, be proactive, not reactive. And certainly it doesn't mean that that person is going to be involved in a street takeover. But I think this really, I think, opens a bigger picture to just understanding the, you know, legality around these vehicles and also ways that you can keep your road safer, your neighborhood safer. And so, Sergeant Davis, I really appreciate you coming on and talking through this with us. Again, we understand, you know, at the surface, the dangers with street takeovers, for example. But I think just in our everyday lives, we see, you know, maybe some of this activity going on and we don't really do anything about it. So I think it's interesting to know more about it and to be able to get involved with finding solutions.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my pleasure. Another thing I want to add, I know I did touch on this with you at one point in time in the past. So our intelligence operations unit continues to monitor for any of these events that may be planned or in the planning stages so that we can get ahead of them and stop them before they happen by having an increased presence in the area.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, that I think you told me about, it had to have been you, was that app. I have it, the CT Safe. I think you can also put tips on that app if you have it. It's free. If you do spot, you know, vehicles, groups of people, because that also can help police in doing their job to get ahead of a potential street takeover, right?
Yes, correct. So CT Safe is through the Department of Emergency Management and Homeland Security. So they also oversee the Connecticut Intelligence Center. And we do have personnel assigned to CTIC, the Connecticut Intelligence Center. So it kind of becomes a hand-in-hand operation with our intelligence unit and getting information out to the field.
That's amazing. So there you go. You can be part of the solution. And I really appreciate you, Sergeant Luke Davis, for being here and talking to us about this today.
Of course, Melissa. My pleasure.
All right. Sergeant Davis with the Connecticut State Police right here on Melissa in the Morning.